Right.
Let's do it, guys. Welcome to the podcast. I've got a great guest here with me today, introduced by a mutual friend of ours, Gillian Goodsell. Jason Dean, you're welcome, man.
Oh, so great to be here, Dee. Thanks for having me on your show. Real privilege and honor.
Cheers, man. So just a little bit about Jason. Jason became active in the space in the Bitcoin and crypto space in 2013. He made a decision in 2018 to sell his traditional businesses, which, looking at what you do now, I can assume you had more than one, but he made a decision to sell his traditional business and go full-time Bitcoin. Jason's a Bitcoin and macro analyst, author of two Bitcoin books, I believe now, a speaker, educator with Bitcoin Pioneers. We'll get into that a little bit later. Jason's involved in mining and many other Bitcoin-related projects. One of which I'm also want to get into is Bitcoin racing, because me being a motorsport fan, I'm interested to hear about that. But Jason, you're a busy man. Fair play.
I am, and I'm loving it, right? Because I mean, we were talking about this off air, weren't we? If you love what you do, you never work a day in your life, right? And once you get the passion for Bitcoin, once you understand it, that's the moment, right? When you understand it and the difference it makes to the world, I mean, you just can't leave it alone, right? So it becomes slightly obsessive, and yeah. So getting involved with as many projects as I can that I can actually safely work still is important. But yeah, loving it.
Deadly. Since you're an expert, I want to dive straight in, and I want to pick your brains. Is Bitcoin dead now, or is this just a normal macro cycle? Because you've been through this before, or you've experienced things. So is it dead? Is it finished?
Well, Bitcoin is always dead, actually, if you speak to mainstream media. What's that obituary? It's 99 Bitcoins, isn't it? You've seen the Bitcoin obituary? And yeah, that I've made a couple of recommendations myself for articles that have come up, and they've been added. But yeah, I mean, mainstream media, Bitcoin's always dead, right? So the question is more to people like myself and yourself, actually. What's our view in it? So people tend to use the headline indicator, which is price. Okay, that's always the go-to number, but really it's the wrong number. And I think we all start doing that. We all start just, we get obsessed with the price first of all. But really, of course, the real numbers are adoption numbers. It's how many wallets have Bitcoin in them. It's Lightning network capacity. It's number of retailers accepting Bitcoin, either natively, which is not that common, obviously, but m normally through Lightning. So if you look at all of those numbers, they are all going up. So they're the key indicators, really. So yeah, Bitcoin absolutely isn't dead. There's no way now that you're ever going to be able to stop it anyway. So it's here. You could maybe argue its rate of adoption is slightly slower, but at the end of the day, it's going to make no difference at all to where we're going with this thing. So make no mistake, Bitcoin's here to stay. Bitcoin will grow, and Bitcoin will solve a crap load of problems going forward. Not that it's not going to be painful on the way, obviously, but there you go.
Yeah, brilliant. What sort of causes the price to go up so much and then to come down so much, in your opinion? Because it's scary for people on the outside. I know for me, when I looked in first, it sort of attracted me. The bull market attracted me in, but then the bear market hurt me. This is my second round, so I'm a bit tougher now, and I understand it a little bit better. But man, when you're sitting on the fence, it's like, what is going on with that thing? Is it heavily manipulated, or what's causing it to rip and then crash so much? And I know it's making higher highs over time, but what causes this massive volatility?
Yeah, it's crazy, and I can really relate to what you're saying about that feeling, because particularly when it's the same for everyone, because no one grew up with Bitcoin, right? So we've had to learn Bitcoin. It doesn't matter what age you are, you've had to learn it, and that will be the same for quite some time, right? It's a bit like the internet. My kids just use the internet. It's always been there, right? To them, for us, we had to learn about how you use this thing. So when you first get involved and you really don't understand it, you just think it's this crazy weird thing that probably a mate told you about down the pub, and you stick 100 quid in, and then it goes all over the place. It is hard to understand what you're doing until you understand Bitcoin itself. So I've been involved personally with two major cycles. So I bought my first Bitcoin I think it was late 16, early 17, or somewhere around there, but price was still quite low. So I had that first run. I understood it a bit by the time that the big December run into 2017 came along. And we really believed that the institutions were coming. We really thought they were on board. And we thought, wow, this is it. This is the run to 100,000, 300,000, million. Yeah, it's going to happen now. And of course, there was the big collapse and it all went wrong. Now, looking back, when you're all calm and collected and you've got the benefit of experience, it was quite clear that this was just a purely retail-driven speculative bubble. Right, we all got overexcited and we all went silly and bought lots of Bitcoin because we thought things were happening. None of those things were happening. It was way too early. So then we go through this cycle again, exactly as you mentioned, which is kind of loosely linked to the sort of the mining cycle. I don't want to get into that too much because it's a little bit complicated, but essentially there is a sort of 4-year theoretical cycle behind the whole thing. You know, went through the doldrums, the long winter, and then suddenly we had our next run, which was it middle of last year it started, wasn't it? Where are we now? 22. So yes, that was middle of last year. Then we had that big run up towards $69,000. Again, it felt the same, right? It was crazy. You know, the bear case was impossible to argue. It was going up. It was solid. It was crazy. And again, it was very much the same thing. Now, this time it wasn't so much a retail-driven speculative bubble, but because there was some institutional involvement and other stuff going on, but it was still a speculative bubble. The underlying numbers, in terms of the ones I talked about, you know, the Lightning adoption, retail adoption, they weren't strong enough to support that level that it got to. It was driven very much on a speculative level again. And of course, that corrects at some point. And in this case, has done some additional damage because in that build-up, we also had some other craziness going on in the crypto sector, which of course is different from Bitcoin, but are often linked together, unfortunately. And that created some extra overheating and some extra problems. And now we're paying for that in this very, very messy period that we find ourselves in. So yeah, I mean, look, we are in the early stages. It is still treated as a risk on speculative asset. It is very much traded rather than used. That over time, that balance will reverse, but we're definitely not there yet. So buckle up, there's going to be some more rough rides ahead for sure.
Can I ask you a personal question? Do you consider it risk on
Bitcoin?
Yeah.
No. Not at all. That's just my opinion. We always got to say the not financial advice bit, right? Sure, so it's like you have to say it now with everything you say, I think. But no, from my perspective, absolutely not. This is one of the most secure and, you know, just versatile assets mankind has ever created. I mean, we have literally never had anything like this before, ever. In our entire history, something, an asset that is open to everyone. I mean, I use the term asset loosely as well. Sometimes people pick up on that, but I'm just using it just as a nice, simple term. But it's, you know, an asset that anyone in the world can access and use as currency, as a store of value and a medium of exchange, you know, those three elements of money, without asking permission from anyone. And this can be done even in societies where people are oppressed and don't have access to proper banking facilities. So, I mean, you know, I'll just go off on one here, so I better stop. But I mean, you know, it's a really exciting thing. And these sort of things, the point is those things you cannot stop, right? You can successfully oppress people for a while. You can try and, you know, force people to do other things, but ultimately this is a basic human need. And it's an open source network. So you combine those two things and the whole thing is absolutely unstoppable, whatever your position is. So absolutely not. It's not risk on it. It's a logical evolution. We're just pretty early. So it seems that way.
Yeah, I struggle with that myself sometimes because I'm like, why can't everyone see this? But then maybe they don't have the time we have to go and dive in and the thousands and thousands of hours that we've put in it. I certainly didn't think this way years ago, but now I'm just, and I sort of think of it, as you say, like the internet. If we were to go way back then, we didn't know what the internet was going to do. We just knew, geez, we've linked up all these computers. Some geniuses were probably there going, oh, this is going to turn their life on its head. But most of us were just like, all right, so I don't have to go to the library anymore. That's all right. And I see Bitcoin a little bit like that, that we don't even know what way this, it's like a building material. We don't know what we're going to be able to build on this new technology that's unlocked things that we've never had access to before. So it's so unknown.
I mean, that's a great analogy, actually. And I use that one a lot, the internet. I've done a few podcasts on just that subject, comparing the early days of the internet with the early days of Bitcoin, because I had the unique position in that I was involved with the early days of the internet by, you know, my main position at Microsoft, which is a little software company you may have heard of, in the sort of particularly the mid to late 90s, was driving internet adoption. And we've got all the same objections we get to Bitcoin, in terms of who's going to use it, only terrorists will use it, you know, all of these same issues that we had then. But ultimately, it was an open source network with this human need. So it was unstoppable. And, you know, 30 years later, we're still trying to work out some of the legislation around that. And now we've got this new open source network with this solving this global human need. And we're going to have a lot of fun with that, you know, in terms of regulation and what have you going forward. So yeah, a lot of work to do. But I love that analogy with the internet, because I think it's really sound. Oh, and by the way, the other thing is, of course, you didn't have to use the internet in the early days, did you? For the first sort of 10, 15 years, it didn't really matter whether you liked the internet or not. You didn't have to use it. You could choose not to be involved. But you can't really do anything now without using the internet. It's very difficult. And I suspect ultimately Bitcoin will go the same way. So I think for a lot of people, they choose not to get involved because in their minds, it's too much. And it does take a while to understand. I mean, that's let's be honest, it does. You don't get it straight away. So as a result, you don't have to use it, do you? So you don't have to use it probably for years yet. So as a result of that, I think a lot of people don't choose to use it yet, but there will come a time where it will be advantageous to, and then there may even come a time where it basically you're going to have to, but we're years off those yet.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Never thought about the having to use it, but yeah, perhaps we're just that early and we'll touch wood, look back and go.
But it's an early mover advantage. I mean, you had the early mover advantage if you were using the internet early. I mean, it was pretty ghastly to use.
Yeah.
And actually, Bitcoin is still quite clunky in many ways to use. But, you know, it's getting better all the time.
Yeah. No, and I've experience of being an early mover. In one of my earlier business was in fitness. And when live video came about, it wasn't a done thing to stick a camera phone in your face and talk. And all your buddies were like, what are you doing? But yeah. Fortunately enough, I had a mentor, a business coach, and he made me do this. And no other business in Ireland was doing this. And the traction I got from that business without paying for it, I used to be paying for flyers and all this stuff. And it just taught me, now every business, you go on any social media, someone's got a camera in their face talking about it. But you have to do it to have your brand.
Yeah, but, right. You have to now.
Yeah, I got such an asymmetric advantage from being an early mover. It sort of always made me open now to go, okay, I know what it's like to feel uncomfortable and no one's doing it, but that doesn't mean it's wrong.
Yeah, exactly right. In fact, now it would be weird if these days to not do it. So you've gone through the exact same phase. You've got early mover advantage. It's kind of good to have. And now, if you don't do it, you're going to struggle actually to get your message out there. So these processes are completely normal.
Yeah, super interesting. Macro, what's your macro outlook for the next 12 months, if I could pick your brains on that? And how do you see Bitcoin reacting to this?
Oh, mate, that's a question, isn't it? look, I think the short answer is the outlook for the next 12 months is nothing good. It is a mess. It really is. I did an interview actually at the Bitcoin Collective in Edinburgh a few weeks ago with Alan Farrington, like a fireside chat on the main stage. And Alan Farrington is the chap who wrote Bitcoin is Venice. And I don't know if you've ever read it. I do recommend it. It is a pretty heavy going Bitcoin book, because this guy has got, you know, a brain the size of a planet. And it's one of those books where you have to sort of analyze each paragraph as you read it. So this is not a book you sit and read in one go, right? But luckily it's a collection of essays and you read them in sections, and that's the only way I could read it, because I really had to sit and understand. what he was talking about. But it is a very, very clever book with some really interesting insights. So to have the opportunity to discuss macroeconomic outlook, which is kind of his area, with him on stage was a real privilege, and slightly nerve-wracking because, you know, he's so smart on the subject. But we did sort of agree, really, that wherever we go from here, it's not good. There are no good outcomes. And, you know, kind of secondary to that, you know, Greg Foss, obviously, you know his work and his discussion about the bond market and what's going on with money, and it's just math and all that kind of stuff. I mean, he's absolutely right. Even if you want to skip out all the kind of political outlook and all that kind of stuff and just look at the numbers, it is mathematically certain that we cannot pay back our debt, and at some stage we'll not be able to even service the debt that we have within our existing financial system. So because we know that's a mathematical certainty, it only becomes a question of when, not if, it all falls apart. And we are kind of in the early stages of that because some people argue actually in fairly late stages of that, but I still think overall we're in fairly early stages. Because things like COVID, you know, really accelerated things. And then, of course, the whole Ukraine war has created this extra pressure at a time where economies were already under pressure. So that has broken, that's put enormous pressure on the fiat system. That's the money that you and I use. So we've had to create a lot more of this, which has created inflationary pressures. That creates a lot more borrowing, but not directly, but there's also been a lot more borrowing, which means we've got more interest to service. Interest rates are going up, so there's an issue with that. But it's also created a real mess with the supply lines at a point where there's some of them were already broken because of COVID and haven't been fixed yet. So we've got this sort of double whammy of pressures everywhere. And as a result of that, the outlook is not rosy, because people have started to realize I can't buy as much stuff as I did because inflation, that stealth tax is eating people's money. And even people who don't really understand how money works, and let's face it, most people don't until you really look into it. Most people are understanding they can't buy as much stuff as they could before, or even pay the bills, let alone buying nice stuff. So we've got that issue. So they're going to companies and saying, well, or the government saying, well, can we have more money? And they're saying, we can't do that because that will create an inflationary pressure, even though we could produce and we just printed all this money to do these other things. That really irritates people. So you start to see a lot of strike action. In fact, I think today, haven't we got a rail strike and a postal strike today, which is, it's, there are other things involved, but it's fundamentally about money. We've got a lot more strike action lined up. And I saw a statistic the other day that we lost more days in the UK to strike action in November than we had since 1991, I think it was. I can't remember the exact numbers. It was a few hundred thousand days. So those trends, you know, you look at these underlying trends of these numbers. So days lost to strikes, number of strikes coming up, that tells you what that discontent is going on now. And that is difficult. If it gains momentum, is very, very difficult to control. And I'm just talking about the UK. We're seeing it all over the world. As you know, there's unrest and difficulties happening everywhere. But fundamentally, it's all linked to freedoms and particularly freedom of spend and freedom of choice. And of course, the old favourite money, which is kind of a big function of that. So it's a very long-winded answer. And actually, I haven't answered it, have I? Because we've got the Bitcoin part. But basically, yeah, we are talking about a global economy, right? So there's a lot to mention. But hopefully that makes sense in terms of where we're going. I'm really sorry to depress anyone who's listening to this, but, you know, it's not going to be fun ahead. So this is where you take personal responsibility going forward. But in terms of Bitcoin, well, there is an argument to say that all of this is good for Bitcoin because it will force people to look at Bitcoin. I personally think that's a little bit negative because at this stage, forcing people to look at something is not ideal. I don't really like that idea of people being forced to look at it, but I do like the idea of people being more actively open to looking at alternatives and taking the time to understand Bitcoin. So it may help with some of the adoption issue. But then again, you know, it's just as volatile as everything else at the moment. So, you know, maybe that's working against it. I think in the short term, over the next 12 months, I think the market will carry on pretty much as it is. We've got the whole FTX fallout and crypto issue going on as well, which is kind of a separate pressure because, as I say, they're always lumped together incorrectly, but they are. But in the long term, I think it sets us up very nicely to move towards a Bitcoin standard adoption. But I think your question was just the next 12 months, wasn't it? And the next 12 months.
Just a macro, and it's been super interesting. You've covered a lot there.
I know I went off on one there, didn't I? So
Yeah, no,
sorry
but
about that.
how do you ask about macro and not give a long answer?
Yeah, I could have just said not good, I suppose. That's where I started.
Yeah, one of the things I find though at a personal level, I'm not sure if you experienced this with your education, is that when as educators, when we're helping people fall down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, to me, I find it. And for me personally, it's been the case, is it gives people hope. You know, it changes. It goes, okay, we're in the shit. Things aren't looking good, but here's this new technology, and everything about it seems to fix all these problems. I'm going to direct my attention into that. And while everyone is talking doom and gloom, I'm just excited because I'm diving down this rabbit hole. I'm hopeful, and I found that personally, and I find that with a lot of my customers, clients, and people I've chatted to about Bitcoin, that just their demeanor changes, and Bitcoin gives them hope. And I think that's really powerful because ultimately all we have is our present moment, and if we can choose to experience that in a better way, regardless of the external situations, well, that makes Bitcoin beautiful, whether it wins or not.
Yeah, and actual fact, you've made a very valid point there. I mean, here's a question to ask yourself. If Bitcoin didn't exist, how would you feel now with what's going on in the world? I mean, your outlook immediately would change, right? Because it feels like we have a lifeboat. It feels like we have a way to go. It feels like we can help other people reach there. But sometimes, you know, if I get, you know, I'm lost in something I'm doing, I'll just have that thought. And imagine if Bitcoin was not here, what would I be doing now? How would I be feeling? And honestly, I can't even think about it. It terrifies the hell out of me. Because I say, once you have the understanding, you can't unsee it. So yeah, it does bring the optimism. I think that's a fantastic point, didn't it? Really, really
Yeah,
well
we'd
made.
be, yeah, no. And without Bitcoin, you'd just be racing. I'd be working 10 times harder for the same as what I used to have. Like, or maybe 10 times is exaggeration, but I'd certainly be working degrees harder for the same stuff. And I'd be thinking, whatever I'm doing now, I got to up my output. Like, I got to 2x what I'm doing over the next 5 years just to keep this enterprise afloat. And that's why I think it's really important that we share Bitcoin, because ultimately it gives people hope, it gives them something positive to focus on, and that's the most important thing, I think. You mentioned FTX, so I'd like to get your take on that, please, Jason. How do you feel the US will deal with that? Sam looks like he's in big trouble. I was watching a little bit yesterday on the news, and those senators are not happy. I think he's going to be made an example of. How do you think this is going to affect maybe Bitcoin, crypto? Is it positive, negative? Did the space need it?
Again, huge answer, right? So I'll try and stay focused this time. So let's go through because you've asked me several questions in there,
Go as
Tim.
long as
So,
you want, man.
all
You're
right, okay, right. So
just spitting out gold nuggets, so we're happy to absorb.
oh, bless you. Okay, right. So let's go through, right? So I mean, look, let's face it. SBF, Sam Bankman-Fried, was not he wasn't a Bitcoiner at the end of the day, right? He's a crypto guy. And he realized that he could create tokens basically and use it, give them value and use that as leverage. I mean, we know the story, we know how this unfolded now. And then it's a totally bizarre situation that you had this guy and what was it, Caroline at
Alameda.
Alameda, yeah, who were basically just saying, hey, we've got a few billion. They're just moving around and just do stuff. I mean, it's just, you can't believe this has been going on. We always knew. You know, it's a bit Wild West, but I didn't certainly realize just how crazy it was behind the scenes. So yeah, absolutely right. I mean, I think there's genuine remorse. I think it's just remorseful that he got caught ultimately. And his view is, well, it's not his view, but I mean, his outlook is not good because, as you rightly say, this is not going to end well for him, and I have to say, quite rightly so, because there's lots of money being lost here. Now, that has had a knock-on effect, of course, because we already had issues with Celsius and other things, so 3AC we had as well, didn't we? And a whole bunch of other ones. So that has completely smashed the confidence at the moment in the crypto markets, and quite rightly. I'm fairly negative about crypto in general, as is quite well known. I mean, I'm not particularly malicious maxi, I suppose, but I do consider most of those coins to have no value at all, almost all of them, if not all of them. But I do, at the same time, respect people's choice. If they want to take a punt on something which is basically an equity, that's how I think of them. Their equities are controlled by other people and their like companies. You know, knock yourself out, crack on, have some fun with it. But understand, ultimately, that area is a mess, and it's a wasteland, and it's a total wild west. Total contrast to Bitcoin, which is the only decentralized true commodity, right? So they're not even comparable. They are always lumped together. So why have I said that? Circling back to your question, what will happen next is, I know it's a terrible thing to say, but I think the crypto industry needed this. It needed a good slap around, you know, like a parent coming out and saying to its child, what the hell are you doing? You idiot, right? This is your punishment. This is going to happen. Because we all, you know, got silly on the whole thing. We didn't, but we were probably complacent. I think it's fair to say we were complacent on what was going on there. Maybe we should have insisted that people look into this a bit more before it got out of control. So in the short term, it's going to be a mess. It's going to take a while, quite a long while, for confidence to come back. Some of that crypto is never coming back, of course. It's going to stay at zero, and they'll just exist as zombie coins. And Bitcoin, for the short term, certainly is going to be lumped into the same category. So, because there is not this differentiation widely known yet that they are different things. So, yeah, it's going to be horrible for the short term. I'm fully expecting it to stay where it is for some considerable time, possibly even take another hit lower if we see more contagion or we see miners capitulating, something like that. So, long term, I think it's a very good thing, really good thing.
Do you think, Jason, will be positive regulation come about from this, or is there such a thing as positive regulation in your view?
I think there can be, because I think for crypto, again, you know, I bang into that drum all the time, which is totally different from Bitcoin. Crypto needs regulation, right? Because we can't be trusted, I'm talking collectively, to do this properly, right? And we've been here before. You know, we've talked about the internet, we had it with the dot-com boom, right? Because people were going stupid, and these stupid projects got funded and people lost a lot of money just because it went crazy and it wasn't properly covered and due diligence wasn't done right. So we've been through this cycle before. There's probably cycles before that as well. So crypto is so new, that needs to be really heavily regulated, in my view. Sure, let it exist, allow that growth and development. And there'll be some ideas, there'll be things there that we don't even know that crypto can do yet. But it has to have that regulation. Now, Bitcoin, on the other hand, is a completely different situation. Regulating Bitcoin is much harder because you can't surf notices anywhere. There's nowhere to go to. About the best you can do is try and make it very difficult for people to use it. And we've seen places like China, which is obviously quite an oppressive society, have tried to do this. And, you know, you don't mess with the Chinese authorities. You know, those guys aren't known for their empathy in dealing with it. And yet there is Bitcoin use there. There is still Bitcoin mining activity there, which is, you know, quite amazing that it is. And it's quite significant as well. So even in a country like, you know, China cannot stop their people doing, you know, using crypto, or particularly Bitcoin. So, you know, it's trying to regulate it. You're going to have to work with the people, because there will always be workarounds. And the only way you can do it really is to switch off the internet, switch off satellite signals, switch off radio signals, all of which can be used to manage the network and send your society back to the Stone Age. And I don't think that's really going to work in this day and age.
Yeah. So I am. The way I think about that is of trying to say squash Bitcoin. It's like, it's definitely impossible. Drugs are illegal. Drugs are bad for you. Drugs will kill you. and any of us know someone who knows someone who might know someone, and we can get anything we want. Okay, yeah. What's the odds of us having access to something that's actually going to protect our wealth and protect our family's wealth? You know, you just drive it into a huge black market, so it doesn't make sense to go that way. I'd like to turn it a little bit more positive now. And
yeah, let's do that.
You've built your life around Bitcoin. So what is it that's making you so passionate and excited about a Bitcoin future? What sort of things are you seeing, or what can you forecast or consider in the future?
Well, I mean, you actually made a very good point earlier. Then we talked about, you were talking about the things that we don't know yet. And actually, again, going back to the internet, even working with the internet, we thought it might be really cool one day that you might be able to download a video clip or send a file somewhere without using a floppy disk. I mean, that was the extent we got to. We never thought of things like Uber and Airbnb and all these other systems. So there's a whole line of thinking that has still to come through. Now, that's in itself is quite exciting. But even what we know now is just a total game changer when you spend the time understanding it. Because I think, you know, you and I were probably the same, right? So you discover it, you think, oh, good, I can make some money here with Bitcoin. And it does something, I don't know what it is, but it sounds cool. Let's do that. And as you start looking at it, you think, wow, okay, so I'm independent of the system. And I can use it to protect against a currency I have no control over. And so you start to understand that. And you think, well, hang on a minute. What about the people in developing countries who have no access to banking? Because banks won't deal with you if you don't have much money. I mean, that's just the reality, right? If it's not profitable, you're out of here, mate. So, you know, suddenly they can bypass all of that. I've written a few articles about that. I've also written one about war as well, because, and this is, of course, very pertinent at the moment, because, you know, in the days, you know, where a country invaded another one, we thought we were past those days, but we're right back there again now. You know, you had to leave everything behind and hope it was there when you got back, and it almost certainly never was. What happens to your money? Well, you might be able to get the bank and get some money out, but the currency will probably collapse anyway because there's a country being invaded. And even if you did survive and you went back, you didn't have any ID, how would you get your money? What if the bank's gone, the currency? I mean, it's just the chances of you not losing everything were remote. Now, suddenly, you can be stripped of literally everything and have your wealth stored in a C phrase in your head. And to me, that's another game changer that we have never had in history. You know, the closer you could get is go off with your gold, but someone's going to relieve you of that somewhere along the line. So it's not a way, it's not a good way to go. So it's just little things like that, which sound little, but actually are quite major, that really get me excited in terms of the use side. On the back end, on the mining side, because, you know, I'm a Bitcoin miner as well, the change in narrative over the last couple of years has been incredible, because my second book, How to Explain Bitcoin to Your Mum, actually has a chapter, because it's written 4 years ago, it has a chapter on one of the problems of Bitcoin, one of the drawbacks. And that chapter is all about power use and acknowledging the fact that, you know, because we use this, what we call this proof of work consensus, you know, it uses the laws of physics basically to ensure that Bitcoin has value and scarcity. It comes at a cost of power. So there's been a lot of negative press. I'm sure you've seen all of this, right? About, oh, it uses more power than all of this and all of that, and it's just a really bad thing and we should stop it immediately. But that narrative is still there in the mainstream press because they're always years behind. But behind the scenes, we've now learned that actually Bitcoin mining is net benefit. And actually none of us really thought of this a few years ago, but the fact that we can now stabilize grids, we can now stop methane emissions. And these are the things that are happening. And it also drives renewable energy adoption, solar and wind.
Jason, could you just explain stabilizing grids briefly and maybe methane as well, just super briefly?
Okay, we'll do it. So
for anyone who can understand the terms.
Yeah, sorry, I did go off on one again. Right, so what happens is you've got a power grid all the time. You've got to match the output with the input. So these two things always got to be kept very close together. which is lovely if you're using something like coal powered, because you just burn as much coal, but again, not very good for the environment. So what you want is wind and, you know, solar. But the trouble with those, they're not steady. So they bounce around all over the place. And you've got to try and match it up. So you have to have something else, which you know, like gas usually, or nuclear, which is kind of your stabilizing element. You power that up, power it down. Now, what Bitcoin mining does, Bitcoin mining can go anywhere. So it says, right, all this power, because there's a lot of wasted power as well. First of all, we'll take that. And we'll take it at certain times, and we'll take it just, and we can stick it anywhere. So we'll stick it right next to you where there's no degradation, and you know that transmission loss is eradicated. But here's the other cool thing. If we were to take a certain level of power, it means you can overinvest in solar and wind. And because you've overinvested in solar and wind, you've got bigger fluctuations, but now you've got a buyer of last resort who gives you a stable baseline. Now, what's really cool is you think, well, you're still using all the power, but don't forget, mines you can switch off instantly. So you have an agreement then with the power company. You can power down literally in a second when the power grid needs it, and you act as a stabilizer for the grid without increasing the drive for fossil fuel. So I've waffled a bit, but hopefully I've explained it okay. And the methane side is oil and gas fields have, you've probably seen them, you know, the big gantries with fire coming out the top. Gas is valuable, but these fields in the middle of nowhere, it's impossible to get the gas anywhere, so just burn it off, which is terrible for the environment, really bad for the environment, and it's licensed and controlled theoretically, but there's not as much as you'd like to think. And then what happened is miners come and say, I'll tell you what, why don't you take that pipe out of the burner, put it into this generator, we'll use it to create power, we'll drive the miners, we'll build everything right on the site next to the pipe. It still creates some greenhouse gases, but it's 30 times less. And of course, you're contributing to the world's most, you know, versatile and powerful monetary network. So those are just a couple of very quick examples of how that works. But the point is, I'm very excited about where this is going, and I'm personally perfectly involved with several projects which are driving renewable energy and stabilizing those grids. So that is, again, we're just at the beginning of that. This is another net benefit for humankind, over and above the monetary system, and we never even thought of that a few years ago.
Yeah,
so, again, emphasizes your point that you make early.
Yeah, no, and that's brilliant. That's even just clicking in my mind as you're talking. It's like, maybe this is what we needed for the green rollout, that without Bitcoin and this thing to dispense the energy into it so that we could overbuild, that Bitcoin is required for the transition from more fossil fuels to greener fuels. It's amazing. Will you tell us a little bit about Bitcoin Pioneers, please?
Oh, Bitcoin Pioneers, yeah. This is one of my projects that I'm involved in, and I love it. I'm very passionate about this one. So I'm community leader Bitcoin Pioneers, and basically we are a group of just everyday people, right? Most of us work, we all work full-time, but most of us work outside of the industry. And we just have a simple community. It's only a few hundred of us around the UK. And the idea was to create a way to help spread the adoption and education of Bitcoin, but do it on a kind of personal level, right? So remember I mentioned earlier about, you know, you might be introduced to Bitcoin by your mate down the pub or whatever. So you've got your own network. That'll be a social network, professional network. It's different to mine, different to the next person's. So the whole point was to kind of be the person that you wish you could have spoken to when you discovered Bitcoin, and do it on a sort of face-to-face, you know, sort of, I sort of know you either directly or indirectly. And because of that, you have all these networks which interact with other networks. You can actually reach quite a lot of people. And then each of those people in the community will be able to get people started in Bitcoin by giving them £10 free of Bitcoin. And it is just a gift. And the reason we do that is it breaks down all the fears that you and I and probably everyone else have, which is, if it's virtual, what does it look like? How do I store something virtual? Will I lose my money? I don't understand how you get it on your phone. So all of those things that, you know, you build it up in your head, it's too hard. So you say, well, I'll tell you what, actually set you up with a wallet and give you £10. Totally free gift. And then we say, right, we've got also, now you've got your £10, why don't you come to a free, open, light-hearted, high-level webinar, and you can learn about what it is you've actually got. Just the basics, just understand how we got here, what Bitcoin is, what might happen next. And you can ask the presenter any question you like, anything to do with Bitcoin, literally anything, even if you think it's a trick or a hard question, just ask away. And then that's enough to usually to get the these people then on the way to learning about Bitcoin, or at least intrigued enough to take the next step and understand what it is they've actually got. Because as I say, we know this is a long process. You can only do step by step, right? But and the target audience is people who have genuinely got an interest in Bitcoin. They keep hearing about it, want to know more, but are a bit scared about it, don't know who to go to, don't really understand what they read online. So there's kind of that personal touch. And our partners in this are Luno. We partner with them because their wallet is beautiful for beginners. It's a really, really good, a lovely way to get started in Bitcoin. It's just not a complicated screen. It's a lovely, pretty screen with a big button that says get Bitcoin. And you can understand that, right, when you first start.
Awesome, man. Sounds deadly. And I'm coming to the webinar this evening, so I'm looking forward to getting
orange. Yeah, it'd be great to have you there. Yeah, come along.
Bitcoin racing, I couldn't let you go without talking a little bit of motorsport, because I'm a motorsport fan, into motorbikes, cars all my life, and I will burn the ears off anyone if they'll let me. So once I seen you had involvement in that, I was like, okay, tell us what's the setup there and what's going on.
Oh, Dino, I think you might have to come and see us next year at one of the races. Look, I can't take too much credit for this. This was set up by the McKenzie family earlier this year. So Sandra McKenzie, he's had plenty of years of racing experience, and actually he's passed that love on to his son. His sons are Chris and Charlie, and actually they've got a couple of other drivers as well. And they thought, wouldn't it be a cool idea just to have the Bitcoin racing team, because they're all really into Bitcoin, the Bitcoin pioneers themselves, actually. And just start getting the word out. You imagine the commentator, oh, the Bitcoin car comes around the corner. And this did happen. This is, we watched some of the commentary and this, this kept coming up. But they did a very sort of entry level sort of race, C1, something they call city car races. So there's not a lot of TV coverage. I'm not sure if there was any, actually. I think it's just broadcast on YouTube channels. But this was just year one, sort of finding the feet and getting some sponsors in. So people like myself and a few others just donated only small amounts of money, really, just to get the team running. They got a couple of bigger sponsors. Some of the people you know in the industry probably, have put some money and got some stickers on there. We've got some Bitcoin Pioneer stickers, for example, as well. As the season went on, they attracted more and more attention. And then I started getting more and more interested in this. I thought, well, this is great because we can reach all these people. And then I got to meet the team. And then over time, just got more and more involved with this project. And I actually ended up going to El Salvador with them about 6-8 weeks ago, something like that, to have a meet with some senior government officials there, to discuss this endorsement with El Salvador. Because you may have noticed the cars have the El Salvador flag on the roof, because we have this official endorsement signed off at presidential level to have the flag. There is a reason for that. Obviously, El Salvador is Bitcoin country. El Salvador are looking to change their image, having been the most dangerous country in Latin America for decades, and now the safest country. They want to get tourism back, they want to kickstart everything, they're doing really well. So they saw Bitcoin racing endorsed by them as a way to do this. So great first season, lots of fun. We had some great meetups, particularly a big one at Silverstone, the last race of the season. And we thought, well, next year we do something bigger. So we do have, I'm not sure how much I'm supposed to say at this point, but we do have I'll just say it vaguely. I'll update you later because I don't know how much I'm supposed to say. But we're going to be in a higher league next year. This one does have TV coverage, which will be on ITV1. There'll be one, possibly two cars here. We may be running some cars in the City Challenge again through another team, although it will remain the Bitcoin Race team. And we will also be working with a celebrity racing driver next year, possibly in the US, and we're talking with sponsors and partners now to expand it. So, but the mission is identical. So there's more people involved, and there's more stuff going on, but the mission is still the same, which is get the Bitcoin logo in front of many people as possible, Get the sponsors, all little Bitcoin related companies out there as well. And just get that conversation going. So not only have we got the global audience, global Bitcoin audience, we've also got racing fans like yourself who are likely to pick up on that and think, what the hell is this? And start that conversation. So it's all about adoption and education, but doing it in a really fun way.
Yeah, brilliant. And you sort of rally around that and like that, you know, as a Bitcoin or a motorsport person.
Exactly.
Even Real Bedford, like I have a jersey. I'm not really soccer, but I'm like, if I'm going to follow a team, I'm following the Bitcoin team.
Yeah, absolutely right. And it works, isn't it? I mean, it's like the British Bitcoin guys who go around setting up retailers using the Lightning Network. And we had a meetup just a couple of weeks ago, or last week, I think it was, at a pub that just set up Bitcoin. So, of course, as soon as Bitcoin is here, that there's a new place that accepts Bitcoin, we'll go straight there. I mean, El Salvador is kind of the giant version of that, and you've seen their GDP and their go up, and their tourism numbers go up as a result. Because we Bitcoin is like, well, we want to get involved, we want to support it, we want to show you how it works, we're passionate about it. So combining those two audiences just seems like a logical way to go. So yeah, in fact, some of the team is actually still in El Salvador now, just having some more meetings about next year and how far that endorsement goes. So I'll be catching up with those guys soon and see where they are. I'm not jealous at all that they're over there.
Yeah, no, like I barely knew where El Salvador was before Bitcoin. Now I know they've got world's amazing surf, and it's like at some stage in my life I've got to go there and go surfing. Because
can you go surf? Can you surf?
Yeah, no, I'm a passionate surfer. Yeah, man, I love to surf.
Wow. Oh yeah, El Salte Beach, we've got to get you there. I've been there. I can barely stand up, actually. I mean, I certainly can't do roller skating or snowboarding or anything like that. So I don't think my odds of surfing are good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you got to come out there. So that'd be fantastic.
Yeah. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, Jason, is just, let's say you've met a buddy from school that you haven't seen in 20, 30 years. And he's busy or she's busy, and you want, like, what would you say to them? Why should they invest their time into learning about Bitcoin when they've got a job, a career, maybe elderly parents, so much going on, plus they're living through inflation, plus recession talk, and they're worried about their job? Why should they give it the time, do you think? How would you try and...
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of a generic answer to that, which is, look, you're going to have to spend... It's sort of an angle I use sometimes. It's like, you're going to have to understand it at some point. And I do take the pressure off people, say, look, you don't have to learn about it now, but just be aware at some point you're going to need to learn about this. And if you want to, I can help you with it. And actually, every time I speak, because this does happen, I'm sure it happens to you as well, Danny, where people, sometimes you haven't seen, oh, I hear you're in that Bitcoin thing. I don't really understand it. What's that about? So this is part of the reason why I set up the whole... Bitcoin pioneers thing. There's a bit of a selfish reason as well, because this kept happening. You tried to do it with long conversations in the pub. Well, let's get together, we'll have a pint. And I did do that a few times. Actually, it was always fun having a pint, because then it usually got silly towards the end of the night. But the other part of this was, okay, it's not very efficient. So as much as I can get that passion across and the information, as you noticed, I talk a lot, so it you know, sometimes I could overdo it. So I had to try and get that balance right. So by setting up Bitcoin Pioneers, what it meant is that I could just have a quick conversation, particularly if they ask me. I won't force it on people. People ask me about it, but in that scenario, I'll say, yeah, you know, it's great, this is happening, blah, blah, blah. It's, you know, this is what we've got to, we'll learn about this, and, you know, in the future, so on and so forth. Normally starts a couple of questions. I say, right, here's my card. Here's £10 of free Bitcoin. So I do give it out as well. And I'll say, on that card is a link to the webinar. So you come to the webinar, get all the basics, collect your £10. Once you've done that, I will answer any question you like, and I'll happily spend it with you, because now you've got all the basics and you've got some Bitcoin, and now I can just guide you gently through the next part of the process. So that's how. I think the other part of your question was why. And apart from all the reasons we've discussed, and there are quite a lot of compelling reasons there. It's,
what else do you need?
Yeah, I mean, here's the huge list of reasons why. But I mean, look, at the end of the day, I think at this stage, it's probably enough to say to people that understand our current system is broken, that is going to affect you. But there is something, you know, almost certainly that we can do here. And we can talk about different ways that you can do this. But the reality is the system is broken. We're going to have to do something. That it's going to change. Doesn't matter whether you like Bitcoin or not. The fiat system as it is, its days are numbered. We just don't know how many days it is. It still could be years away. Could be a decade, even more away still before this it gets really bad. But it is going to happen. So at some stage, you are going to have to look at alternatives. It just so happens that Bitcoin is the biggest front runner by miles and is best positioned to solve all of those issues in lots of different ways. So that's why you should look into it, even if you don't necessarily agree with it right now.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Just wrapping up, I always ask this question for a bit of fun, because like you say, it's Bitcoin's inbuilt marketing ploy is the price action. It's what
number go up.
Paid attention to it. So just for fun and speculation, not financial advice as we know, but in 2030, where do you see the price of Bitcoin? And you can have a bullish and a bearish.
Oh, man, where are we now? 22, so we're 8 years off. Right. Sure. 8 years off in the current fiat scenario. So, I mean, I've got to get out of jail free card, right? Just looking at it from a macro perspective, because I could say to you, I think Bitcoin be worth $2 million. So you think, oh, that's very good. I say, yeah, but the trouble is, what's $2 million going to be actually worth in 2030? And our current rate of decay, not very much is the answer to that. So it's a meaningless number, because there's this backdrop of what the actual dollar is going to be worth. And I think we have to take into account that over 8 years with what's happening now, it's going to be terrible. So look, I can come up with any number because it doesn't really mean anything. So I think, let's say, and by the way, you're the only person who ever gets an answer from me, because I always skip this question. I sidestep it all the time. But you've been so patient. I'm going to say, right, look, I think, got to be close to $1 million in 2030. I'm not even going to give a bearish answer. I'm going to stick somewhere around there, with the caveat that I don't know what $1 million is actually going to be worth at that point. If you ask me what it is in today's money, that's a different question. So I have no idea. So I'm throwing random numbers at you, really, and just pretending I know what you're talking about.
One Bitcoin is one Bitcoin, I suppose.
That's a better way to look at it, right?
Awesome. Jason, it's been fantastic to have you on. It's been great. It's been really insightful. Where can people connect with you, find your work?
Sure. Okay. Well, the easiest way is Twitter. I'm constantly on Twitter. And my hand, you know, I can't remember what my handle is now. It's Jason A. Dean. Because some of them is Jason Dean. I can't remember which one's which. So it's Jason A. Dean, but Dean, it's got a D-E-A-N-E at the end. So just search me there. That's where most stuff that I do, even articles I write, I tend to publish there as well. If you're on Medium, by the way, I do have quite a big profile on Medium. So look me up there. Just get into Jason Dean and you'll find me. There's lots of articles. A lot of the things we've talked about today, I've written quite detailed articles on. I have been a bit slack on this recently because I've been involved with these other mining projects. So there's not many of these articles recently, but I tend to write ones which, you know, apply anytime. So you can go back and they'll still be valid. Those are probably the best ones. But I always say to people, look, just reach out, get in touch. My DMs are open on Twitter. You can contact, my messages are open on LinkedIn. My email's all over the place, jasondean@msn.com. So just get in touch. I do respond to everyone. Sometimes there's a bit of a delay, but I do respond to everyone. So get in touch, ask a question, disagree, whatever you like. As long as it's about Bitcoin, I'll talk about it till the cows come home.
Jason, that was awesome. Thanks very much for today.
Thanks, man. Really good to see you. Thanks for having me here.